It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast. I'm Bubba Rosenbaum, and Kyle Barber is alongside. Kyle, how you doing, man?
That's Kyle from LaGrange, Barber, Bubba. Get it right.
My apologies. Hey, it's game week. I know you're fired up, and just like I am. It's going to be great to watch some Pirate football.
Absolutely, yeah, man. NC State, East Carolina this Saturday, noon from Carter-Finley Stadium on ACC Network. And it's kind of interesting for me, Bubba. I'm not going to the game. And Dish Network, who we both have, has not picked up the ACC Network. So I had a friend kind of give me access to their Hulu account. So I'll be able to watch the game for their Hulu. Maybe I shouldn't say that on the air. But anyway, I didn't say who. But I'm looking forward to it. And of course, we'll have a much more in-depth preview of East Carolina NC State later on in the week with Morgan Ehlers and who from NC State, Bubba?
Johnny Evans, longtime color analyst on the Wolfpack Sports Network. Johnny Evans, he was a quarterback for the Pack back in the day and also punted, I believe. And then his son, Daniel Evans, was the quarterback when NC State defeated us in Greenville in 2007.
So Johnny Evans, color analyst for NC State, and the PA voice for the East Carolina Pirates and the follower of the starting quarterback for East Carolina, Holden Ehlers, Morgan Ehlers, will join us for our East Carolina Pirate preview. And we'll have that out hopefully Thursday.
Yeah, really looking forward to that. As far as attending the game, I had planned on attending. I know you said you're not going to make it. You're going to be watching it on the ACC Network. And my dad and I were planning on attending, and he still is attending. But my son's travel baseball obviously comes first, and I'll certainly be tuned in, be it on my phone or. Whether it's just the audio with Jeff Charles going old school, so to speak, or watching it on the, I guess, through the ACC Network with the ESPN app, maybe.
Now, you being a Dish Network subscriber, you will not get access to the ACC Network through the ESPN app. You're gonna you're gonna have to find. I don't know. We should talk about this on the air. You have to do what I did and find someone with Hulu or DirecTV or. Whoever your cable provider out there is that will share with you their email and password so you can access through their account through your ESPN app, because you're only allowed access to the channels your television provider provides you with, even through the app.
My situation would be one kind of like yours. I'll just leave it at that.
Okay, there you go. Yeah, all right. Yeah. Bubba will not incriminate himself.
I will not incriminate myself or those individuals who are assisting. But
in fact, I'm not doing anything like that either. I was just kidding.
Yeah, so am I. I'll just listen to Jeff Charles and Kevin Monroe. How does that sound?
Yeah, me too. Yep.
But just generally speaking, I know we're not going to dive into it much now. We're going to talk about the football that was played last weekend with the week zero games, but just generally speaking, what are your vibes about this weekend?
Well, I'm anxious to see what we look like as a football team. I really believe in Mike Houston and this coaching staff, and I believe we have some talent, particularly on the offensive side of the ball. I think we'll be a much improved football team. I think what you'll see in game one this year versus game 12 last year will be a dramatic difference. I'd love to say I think we will win the game, but I'm not going to. What I want to see is to be competitive for all four quarters with a pretty talented ACC football team. And if we do that, of course, I'm never going to be happy with a moral victory against North Carolina State. But if we come out of there and we've played well and it's been a ball game, and no blowouts, and I felt like we did everything we could to win the game, I'm going to feel pretty damn good about the effort and about the season.
Yeah, I fully expect us to be competitive, and I think most people feel that way. Yes, the line is still 16.5, but remember it started at 21, so it's slowly but surely come down, and we'll see if it comes down a little bit more between now and Saturday.
Quite honestly, though, Bubba, we lost by 16. That's a two-score game, technically, and after last year, I mean, you know, I don't want to lose by 16, but let's say we lost by 16. I wouldn't sit there and cry and say, oh, no, we're going to be terrible again.
Absolutely. And something else, and kind of along those same lines, over the weekend on College Game Day, Bear, Chris Falica, I believe is his name, but you always hear him referred to as Bear on College Game Day. He will make his few picks against the spread or over-under win totals in this case, and the Pirates were up there. It initially had started off at +3.5, I think, and then now it's +4.5. And he took the Pirates to win at least 5.
Yeah, started off at 3.5. So many people were taking the over. It rose to 4.5. And he took us as one of his locks. It's his overs. So he that means we would at least win 5 games. And then also on the Herbie Awards, he had us listed as one of his 10 or so most improved teams for 2019.
Yeah, he had us. It was 1 of 5, and it was the Pirates, Baylor. Obviously, Matt Rule's doing an excellent job down there. Herm Edwards in Arizona State, Wake Forest. Dave Clawson doing so well with the Demon Deacons, and then Row the Boat up in Minnesota, PJ Fleck.
Yeah. You know, it's good to be mentioned again on these on these shows like SportsCenter and such, and positive things being said about us. I'll say this. If people can say what they want, and that East Carolina and Eastern Carolina crap gets on my nerves, but when we're any good, I really feel like we get pretty good publicity. I think people like it when we have a good football team because of our fan base.
Yeah, no doubt about it. That's what I know. We talked about it so much in times when you interact with other fan bases. And it's funny, of course, in the state, you hear with North Carolina, NC State, et cetera, they like to try to deny things or play it down. But then you travel to other parts of the country and SEC venues and stuff, and you'll be wearing your East Carolina stuff, and they're like, oh, are you a Pirate fan? And they'll strike up a conversation about one of the wins we've had in our history over Miami or whomever.
Yeah, exactly. So it's one of those things where the ACC schools, NC State and UNC's, hate us, so they try to downgrade us, but they know what we are and who we are and what we do. And to, you know, the NC State fans that want to say this game's not important, your stadium sold out.
Exactly, yep. Saw that news today, and then also saw the news that they have named a starting quarterback. They've had 3 vying for that position, but Raleigh native Matthew McKay has been named the starter for Dave Doran's club this weekend. But Kyle,
yeah, you got a Raleigh native starting for the Wolfpack and a Greenville native starting for the Pirates, so that's fun.
Yep. You take a look at this show. When we have a huge show for you. We have Tim Brando, Timmy B, making his first appearance on the show, and really had a great conversation with him. And then also Mike Yam. So Mike Yam's with the Pac-12 Network, and he's made appearances on the show last season. And we're really looking forward, or really enjoyed catching up with Mike Yam to talk about the Pac-12 and see if he thought it was going to be the Washington Huskies, Utah Utes, maybe even USC getting back into the mix, and how the things are going to go out west this year. But before we get to that first interview with Tim Brando, let's talk about week 0 very quickly. What do you think about the Florida-Miami game?
It was a lot of fun to watch. A lot of mistakes, ugly football, turnovers, penalties. The secondary from Florida just kept making a lot of bonehead penalties. I tell you what, the Miami quarterback held him to the ball too long several times, but he impressed me. As many times as he got sacked, to not get rattled mentally I showed a lot of mental toughness in why he won the starting job. It was an entertaining game, fun game. End of the day, Florida got it done. I love it being, you know, having a marquee matchup for week zero. It'll be interesting to see, you know, they had to petition the NCAA. For week zero, you're supposed to be, the only way you're supposed to be able to play on week zero is if you're playing at Hawaii or play at Hawaii later in the season. So you're playing a 13th game. And you can choose to do so or not. Some schools play at Hawaii. In fact, most schools this year chose not to do that, to play at Hawaii. So, in fact, all did. So they had to petition to have that Florida-Miami game move to week zero to commemorate the 150th anniversary of college football. But with the ratings that pulled in, Bubba, the most watched game on ESPN since 2016, I got a feeling that's going to become a yearly tradition somehow, and I hope it does.
Yeah, you're talking about the ratings, and then I'd seen that statistic that you just referenced, excuse me, as far as 2016, and then I had also seen that it was a 30% increase in viewership from the Miami game against the Gators back in 2013.
Yeah. I mean, when you have two programs like that with the history that those two schools have, and it's the only game on, and people are so damn hungry for college football, and, you know, you get it early like that on August 24th, and, you know, it's not just, you know, any old game. It's Florida-Miami, and it's in prime time, and that's a lot of fun. So hopefully that'll become a yearly thing, not necessarily Florida-Miami, but a marquee matchup on week zero. And the other game the night that a lot of people kind of forgot about because of the kickoff time of the network, but over on CBS Sports Network at 10:30 Eastern, you had Hawaii taking on Arizona in a good week zero matchup. And it was back and forth again, a lot of turnovers. I think the quarterback threw, what, four picks for Hawaii in the win?
Yeah. And Hawaii won that game 45-38 over Kevin Sumlin's Wildcats, and Cole McDonald, the quarterback for the Rainbow Warriors, was 29-41 for 378 yards, four touchdowns, but like you said, those four interceptions. And the thing that was really, obviously, they already had those four turnovers, but then they had a couple of fumbles they lost as well. So they managed to beat a Pac-12 team. I mean, yes, it's not the Washington Huskies or anything, but still, they managed to beat a Pac-12 team despite having six turnovers.
Yeah, I don't think Arizona's very good at all. But I think if Hawaii can quit turning the ball over, they can have a nice season this year. I think if they continue having this turnover problem, they're going to be a 6-6 team. If they can quit turning the ball over, they won't be an 8-win football team, essentially. I'll tell you, one thing I noticed watching that game, Bubba, you remember back when June Jones had that program rolling, that place would be packed.
Right.
You know, I don't know that they would sell it out, but it would be a nice crowd. I was watching that game the other night before I dozed off in the fourth quarter. They went to a bowl last year. Their program hasn't been bad the last couple of years. And, you know, opening up against Arizona, I would have thought they would have had a real nice crowd, and it was pretty sparsely attended. So, yeah. I don't know what's going on with the attendance out there.
Yeah, I haven't seen the attendance figure for that one, but like you're saying, I would have definitely expected it to be 30,000 or something. I mean, based on what we had seen back in the June Jones days and them playing someone like Arizona, but who knows? I guess there's plenty to do in Hawaii, and maybe they'll get those types of crowds. If Nick Rolovich and the Rainbow Warriors continue to progress and get things rolling the way June Jones and company did.
Yeah, I don't know if he can get it done to that level, yeah. But they still a nice way to start the season. Any time a we're going to quit using this term on this podcast, but anytime a school from outside of what's called the Power Five has a chance to beat a school that's called a Power Five a team, I'm all for it.
Absolutely. Kyle, you ready to talk to Tim Brando?
Unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to talk to Tim Brando, but you and Bubba, excuse me, you and Dave did, Bubba, and why don't we go to that interview right now?
Well, it's college football season, and anytime you can have our next guest on, Bubba, I tell you what, very excited to have a gentleman that I think the world of and a man that needs no introduction. Ladies and gentlemen, Tim Brando, how are you, sir?
Great, Dave. It's good to be with both you and Bubba, and we're a week out. My goodness. Friday of next week, I'll be in East Lansing, Michigan for the Spartans and the Tulsa Golden Hurricane, and we're off to the races. And like a lot of people, I'm excited that I get to be home and enjoy football before that. So, and because I've got a Friday night game next week, I can get home on a flight early Saturday morning out of Detroit and, like everybody else, take in all the games, the smorgasbord, on the 31st. So it's a fantastic time of year, and this will be my 35th year covering college football on a national level, going back to my days at ESPN in 85. And that's a long time. You know, that's a long time. And we cranked up this new show called College Game Day in 87. I think that one, you've heard of that, right? You've heard of that show.
Yeah, I know.
It's done really well since I left. But we got the thing started, Bino and Lee Corso and myself, and but I'm as excited today about what I'm doing at Fox as I was when I was a kid working at ESPN. So, you know, that's the great thing. This business will keep you young if you really live it and you love it, and I do. So I'm as excited now as I've ever been.
It's funny you mentioned that. We started the podcast March of 2018, and you were one of the people that were on the definitely my bucket list. So a huge honor to have you on. And I was thinking about the fact how I've been in broadcasting now 23 years. I'm not the young guy anymore. And the good thing is if you're 46, you're pretty much out of sports. If you're playing sports, you're a dinosaur. But I feel like I'm just really, I know it sounds corny to say, but I'm just getting started.
Yeah, no, and that's the way to look at it, because if you don't stop learning, then your heart stops beating. You have to keep learning, and you have to keep growing in our business because everything is technologically is changing around you all the time. That's certainly true in TV. When I got into this business, I was working with guys that were primarily my age or older. And now I'm working with people. In fact, the executives that I'm working for at Fox are, you know, anywhere between 15 to 20 years younger than I am.
Wow.
So there's a good news, bad news part of this story. The good news is some of them, or at least a number of them, must have liked me when they were listening and watching me when they were growing up, because this is what they wanted to do. And now they're telling me where to go and how long to stay. The bad news is they really do know how old I am, regardless of how much makeup and Just for Men I put on. So, you know, I joke to people, they'll say, well, how much longer do you think you're going to keep doing this? And I'll say, until somebody tells me it's over. because that's truly it. I mean, I love what I do. I got into the business understanding that it was a marathon, not a sprint. And to age gracefully is a goal. It's something you want to do. And I think as long as you enjoy what you do, and God knows I do, it does keep you young. And you can defy the odds a little bit. It's an interesting perspective to know that a lot of the guys that started with me in the mid-'80s are either retired or have become presidents of sports divisions or executive producers someplace else. A lot of the guys now at different places that have risen to management positions are a generation younger than I am. You just have to understand that's part of it, and adjusting and adapting to the world we live in and the people you're working around and with. But one thing that's true, regardless of age, is the people that are in sports television got in it because they loved it. They didn't get in it because they thought they were going to become millionaires. They got in it because they loved it. Now, money will come if you do a really good job and you last over time, but that's not the reason you get in. You get in because you just, you know, you'd really, love to say that you never had to work for a living. And I do work at it. I take what I do seriously. I don't take myself seriously, but I do take what I do seriously. And I think that's the method to the madness, if you will, is to not take yourself too seriously, but to go about your business and your preparation very seriously. And if you have that that common thread, it doesn't matter how old or how young the people you're working for really are. They just know that it's not a job to you, it's a life. You know, I tell young broadcasters all the time that they'll say, well, how much time do you spend in preparation? And I'll say, well, you know, the meticulous aspects of putting together my boards for a game take a little bit of time. But in terms of just the overview of how to prepare, it's made easier if you live your job. If you live the life of a sportscaster, that means you're keeping up with everything at all times. Then, yeah, you may have to go back and look at some reading material. But your knowledge and your understanding of history is within between your two ears, and you can call upon it whenever you need it. And in a live event, you need it a lot sometimes.
Yeah, that's definitely we had a media day, and nothing like doing a live podcast when you can't just I guess in our business we're kind of control freaks, but it definitely makes a big difference when you want different guests and you're trying to get people and you're trying to get them for East Carolina for sure. I did have a question for you. For me, being a radio guy, huge fan of the radio show, any hope that I know you're enjoying Fox, but could they put you on Fox Radio? Is that something you'd want to do again?
No, it's not.
Okay.
They haven't asked, but if they did, I would respectfully decline.
Okay.
I spent 14 and a half years doing the Tim Brando show. It began in 2001 when I was with Sporting News, and they had Tony Bruno, James Brown, and myself on back-to-back-to-back. That was quite a lineup at that time, and I really enjoyed it, but I didn't want to do it. They came to me. One of their guys flew out to my home. We went out and played golf, and I gave him reason after reason after reason why I couldn't do it because of my television schedule at CBS at the time. And he just wouldn't say no. He wouldn't leave. And ultimately, every time I said, well, I can't do this, but I can do that, it was like, okay. Well, they just wanted to make it happen, and they did. From a distribution standpoint, it changed. The different time slots I was in changed. A number of changes from afternoon drive to mid-morning to midday. And ultimately, the show went away from Sporting News when they got out of the radio business and sold to Yahoo. And then I took my show over to SiriusXM. And it was at that point CBS came to me with their fledgling cable network and said, we'd like to televise it too. And it took on a new feel when that occurred. And to be able to do it out of my home and to have a production house around the corner from my home made it easier. But it was a lot of work, time invested every day to get up and go and do something that was topical and on point. And I don't do anything halfway. I pour my heart and soul into everything I do. The combination of trying to do that and still maintain my career as a play-by-play broadcaster, both for football and basketball, it took its toll. And when I hit my late 50s, I did 1 year of play-by-play with Fox in 2014, and it was that year I determined that when I was doing studio at CBS, it was easier to accomplish. One hand kind of washing the other. But when you're having to prepare and fly to game sites 2 days out, talk with coordinators and meet at their leisure, you know, when they are free, you can't be tied to a show from 9 to noon every day. I mean, you just can't. So that's ultimately why I walked away from it. I love it when people say they miss the show. I certainly miss the guys I worked with. They're all young people that I've known and helped with their careers, and they're all doing well now. But my days of doing daily radio are over. And frankly, since I left the radio business in terms of doing a daily sports talk show nationally, I don't like the direction that the country's gone in with regard to mixing social issues with sports on a daily basis. A lot of the things that you'd have to discuss are things that at this stage of my life, I simply don't want to discuss. But if you were doing a radio show, you'd have to go there. You know, you would absolutely have to go there. You know, the thought of me having to come on the air and talk about Roger Goodell meeting with Jay-Z and how that's pissed off people in the Colin Kaepernick camp, you know, disgusts me. I just wouldn't want to do that. So I think I stepped away from it at just the right time.
Well, I definitely agree with you. That's why we joke all the time that nobody would hire us. That's why we started our own podcast. But the great thing is locally, we can do whatever we want. We don't have a general manager, as you know. We don't have an owner. We are the owners. We are the general managers. We are everything. So we can have Tim Brando. They can't say, well, don't put Tim Brando or whoever on because they're too controversial, or this car dealer doesn't like Tim Brando or whoever it is. So you can't have him on. So we like the fact that we can say whatever we want to, and we keep it a family show, but we have the freedom that across the board that we wouldn't have at a local, and no offense, I'm friends with all the people locally with the media, so it's not like I have an axe to grind or anything like that. I haven't burned any bridges that I know of, so I wanted to talk to you about football and certainly East Carolina. We think we have a real winner in Mike Houston. I wanted to get your thoughts on Coach Houston, and there's a lot of rough times the last three seasons in Greenville.
Yeah, well, he did a hell of a job with the Dukes, and to have taken that team where he did at the FCS level says a lot. I know he's a Carolina guy, so he's back to his roots in a lot of ways. That's got to mean a lot to him. I think the investment, too, of a little better than $1 million, $1.2, $1.3 million
correct,
annually, is it says a lot about the conference that you know, these are the payouts for these coaches, and some even greater than that. Dana Holgorsen leaving West Virginia to go to Houston, I think, tells you a lot about how seriously AAC schools are taking their football programs. And I'm a big fan of Mike Oresko, as you probably know. We were buddies at CBS, and we used to spend our Saturday nights together after I got off the air at Ben Benson's Steakhouse. And he's one of the most knowledgeable and well-read men in intercollegiate athletics. And he has been, I think, a real asset to the American Conference. And he just beams when he's talking about the setup in Greenville and how it's really just a smaller version of an SEC school. So I know how passionate the fans are there, and to have gone through a difficult period the last, couple of years, they want to get back where they once were. And there's no doubt that Logan had it going. No doubt that Ruffin had a great run there for a brief period of time. And to bring this guy in now with as highly competitive a conference as you have, to be competing with programs like UCF and Memphis and Houston that are so strong across the board, you've got to bring it. You know, you've got to get somebody that you know will have the, I think, the hunger more than anything else for success. And that's what Houston represents to me, is that hunger, the willingness to go out and preach, East Carolina Pirate football and play to, and I think this is something else that can be done, play to today's crowd, not just yesteryear's crowd. This is a guy with a lot of juice, a lot of energy and enthusiasm. And, it's tougher now. I mean, it is, than it was, when East Carolina was really getting it built. That now you've got to swim in a pool with programs that are in bigger metropolitan areas that have donors that are big-time donors that by themselves can go out and procure a guy like Dana Holgorsen, which is exactly what Fertitta did over in Houston. So it's tougher. But if you're going to compete at that level, you need to have a guy out there that is going to be 24/7, 365 on the job, and I think that's what they've gotten.
And if you were able to see the practices are old school. You would be happy to see the intensity that he brings and the staff that he brings. It's just incredible that he had at James Madison. We have a couple former assistant coaches and Steve Schenkweiler and Donnie Kirkpatrick that have come back. They were with him. They come back to East Carolina. So it's you don't have to worry about the staff members getting along. They all already know each other very well. But recruiting has been going very well, which I'm not a recruiter. I'm not a expert on recruiting. I don't really care about 2 stars, 5 stars. I really don't care about that stuff. But he's been doing great. I wanted to ask you about because we had we posted a group of five. We called it Group of Five Preview, and we had some people mad at us on the American board for that very reason. I don't like the term Group of Five or Power Five. I really hate that stuff. I know how passionate you've been on the radio show and just in general. Can you talk about, do you think the American's anywhere close to being a quote-unquote, I use the term, power league?
Yeah, without a doubt. I think that's one of the reasons why you haven't seen Mike Oresko. And I was on recently the American show that's done out of Orlando. I can't remember the gentleman's name that hosts it, but I was on his show. And he was bemoaning some of the criticism that fans had had of Mike relative to, the path that Danny White decided to go on as athletic director of UCF as it related to the whole parade and national championship mantra and rings and all of that. And I quickly pointed out to the host and as well to the fans that, you know, that's not the job of your commissioner. The job of your commissioner is to make sure that the entire league is gaining respect. And part of that means that you got to have relationships with those that you most want to be. Mm-hmm. And Mike Oresko's made no bones about P6. That's been the driving logo of the American Conference. And you don't accomplish those goals by stomping your feet in the ground and calling out people as enemies that are part of the Power Five, or as I like to call them, if you recall watching my show a great deal, the Autonomous Five.
Right.
I used to say, I don't want to hear Power versus Group. Let's just go with Autonomous Five. But it's true. American Conference teams, and you guys are still in a point of needing to play from time to time schools that are in the Power Five. Not necessarily as much at East Carolina or as at UCF as you would at, say, for instance, Tulsa, who I'll have a week from tonight at Michigan State. But having those games against Big Ten teams that are huge payouts for some of these programs are needed. So you want to have a good relationship, if at all possible, with Jim Delaney or the man that just took over for him as commissioner of the Big Ten. So I think that the whole P6 mantra was built on both getting a really good TV deal, which was done. I don't need to tell you that, and I don't know the exact payout, but I think it's somewhere in the neighborhood of $6 to $7 million per team that will come from the television deal that was struck, a multi-year $1 billion with a B contract. That may pale by comparison to what the SEC and Big Ten coffers are, but let me tell you, it's sure as hell a better deal than anybody else in the so-called Group of Five has.
Correct.
There's great separation between the American Conference and the Sun Belt, CUSA, and the Mountain West. I mean, a tremendous amount. And that's not to be scoffed at. You need to appreciate what he's been able to do. And I think moving forward, as the contracts for the college football playoff come to an end in 24-25, I think the Big Ten, SEC, and Big 12 deals will all be ending about the same time, just as the bowls. All those contracts end around that time. Negotiations are going to begin. around 2022-23 in that neighborhood. And when that comes up, don't be surprised if these digital outlets that are out there, whether it be Stadium or Hulu or another good one would be DAZN, if you've been keeping up with them and what they're doing. They're going after streaming rights to the NFL now. I think they're doing the same thing, trying to get live events. I know for a fact DAZN was trying to get a national high school football game of the week. I'm talking big-time matchups, intersectional matchups. Like, imagine a team like Moeller High School playing Permian Odessa, okay, on a Friday night. They were trying to do that this year. They didn't quite get it done. I think they'll get it done next year, just to sort of prove their moxie in terms of live sporting events. These digital outlets are all going to be factors that can be leveraged by certain leagues to get better deals from linear networks like ESPN or Fox or anybody else. No one is more acutely aware of all that than Mike Oresko, who for years was a programming executive when I first met him at ESPN, and then later was in charge of college football programming and college sports in general at CBS as an executive vice president. So I think that the idea or concept of his vision being about not making the group of – his vision is not about, well, let's go make us a great deal for everybody in the group of five. No. His vision is, how do I make the American Conference the sixth conference of the autonomous five? How do we force their hand? Because we're the ones making the biggest difference. And I've said it before, I'll say it to you now. I think the ACC, short of Clemson, is just not very good.
Wow.
And I think it'll be proven this year even more so. The American Athletic Conference, in my mind, for the last 2 years, has been a stronger league than the ACC. And last year it was stronger than the Pac-12, too. Now, I don't think it will be this year. I think the Pac-12 has improved markedly this year. I think there are more really good teams this season in the Pac-12. But, boy, past Clemson, who do you see that's going to really give them a game? I don't see anybody in that league. Whereas in the AAC, I could tell you UCF, Memphis, Houston would give Clemson a far better game, in my opinion. So that's where I see the league and its vision and where it's going in the future. And I think people should be really, really impressed with the job that Mike's already done. His job is not to be a pom-pom waver and dig in and try to get headlines that get people riled up. If the athletic director wants to do that, and by the way, I didn't have a problem with what Danny White did. I thought if I had been in his shoes, I probably would have done the same thing. It helped garner a lot of attention and branding for the program at UCF, and by extension, the American Conference. So good for him. But that's not something you want your commissioner to do. And
right.
I think everything that Mike has done has been exemplary, even with the UConn exit and the whole separation of the beginning of the conference after the Big East separated itself to get the, you know, he gave up the naming rights, but for a price, you know, all the deals he made legally, and he is a lawyer as well. The deals that he made to bring revenue into the American Athletic Conference at its inception are really overlooked by a lot of fans out there.
Yeah, well, I listened to that interview. It's Jeff Allen from Knight Sports Line.
He's down there
in Orlando. Great guy. And I want to bring up a topic that I know you're very passionate about. You and I share. It's funny that you mentioned about the ACC. We talked about that a week or so ago with one of the co-hosts, Kyle, that couldn't join us right now, brought up that very fact about how bad the ACC is. But I want to shift gears a little bit and talk with the time we have left about one of the things that gets me, speaking of a topic that gets me very upset, is the college football playoff, being that I actually do a podcast about East Carolina. I went to East Carolina, and there's a lot of great, that's one of the reasons why I loved your show, radio, and you in general, is the fact that you actually are fair to all the schools and not just the quote-unquote Power Five. And the college football playoff, how do you see it now? Is there any hope that There's different scenarios. Do we ever get to eight? Do we ever get to where a conference championship matters? I just want to get your thoughts on that before we go.
Yeah, you know what? I definitely believe that, Dave. I do. I think that it may be sooner rather than later. And while it may pain you as a fan of East Carolina living where you do, root like hell for Clemson, okay? Just root like hell for them. You want Clemson and Alabama Chapter 5. You just do. Because America doesn't want it. And whatever America doesn't want is something that those of us that want to evoke change really need. You know, I felt that way. If you watched enough of those shows, you remember our BCS, the world in crisis, that we did every day, every stinking day. We got into the, I think we were at like 5,327 days or something before the playoff was announced. And I honestly thought I was ecstatic. I was believing. You know, I wanted to believe that they were, that when they told us there would be an unimpeachable panel of experts that we could count on, that would be fair, that integrity could never be questioned. And by the way, I am not here to question the integrity or cast aspersions of anyone that's ever been on the committee. But I will tell you that that committee, since it was first announced 5 years ago, has not, as it's evolved, has not been diverse enough for me. They have not, in my opinion, brought in anyone to adequately replace someone like Condoleezza Rice, by example. I see a bunch of older administrators, mostly from Power Five, autonomous five schools, being coerced by coaches that are my age and a lot older, who see the game through the same prism, and regardless of who's played whom and strength of schedule, will say, you know, I like the way that team looks right there. I like the way, you know. I think they go into that room, and those administrators yield to, whether it's Tom Osborne or Frank Beamer, or in the early years, Barry Alvarez, you know, name that coach, you know, Ty Willingham, any of those guys. Have a lot of clout in that room, and what we get is basically the same teams, the same brands, and it doesn't matter how easy their path might have been. You've got in the conference itself in the SEC, check out how hard it's going to be for Auburn in the SEC West versus Alabama. Check out how hard it's going to be for LSU versus Alabama coming out of the SEC West, and that's just within the same division of the conference. The instability of scheduling, crossover scheduling within the conferences that have teams, 14 or more teams in it, is nuts. And the lack of concern or use within the formula of strength of schedule for weak non-conference games, because those are the games you control. You know, in the NCAA tournament, the committee is always looking at strength of schedule outside your conference. That matters a great deal. It means zero in college football, absolutely nothing. Because if it did, Alabama could not trot out that garbage for the second consecutive year and get away with it. But they do. And the reason they do is because, well, they're Alabama. And Clemson's a similar story. Even though they've got A&M on the schedule, I'll never give them a hard time because they scheduled A&M by choice. You know, Alabama has to play them. They're in the same league, the same division. Clemson doesn't, so they at least they play them. But Clemson's path in that league, as bad as it is, when you've got a 4 or 5 loss team on the opposite side, that's who you have to beat to get in. And then you look around and you see the path of some of these other schools and how hard it's going to be. Listen, Clemson lost at Syracuse and still got in 1 year. Alabama lost in the final game of the year in the Iron Bowl to Auburn and still got in. So clearly, if you're one of the big kahunas, you're one of the brand names, you can get in. Hell, Ohio State got in 1 year. They didn't win their league.
Yeah.
And by the way, Ohio State didn't get in when they won their league a year ago.
That's right.
So it's crazy go nuts. It makes no sense. And the only way to fix it is either having the five commissioners of the autonomous five leagues agree to no fewer than 10 games of your schedule being against so-called Power Five schools, which will never happen, and uniformity in terms of who you play non-conference that would be considered FBS, but outside the so-called Power Five. And we'll never get that. You know, those commissioners will never give up on that. So the only thing to do, the only way to offset the instability and the lack of concern that these commissioners have for anything other than their own constituency is to go to eight teams. And if it's Clemson, Alabama, Oklahoma, and Georgia again, and it could be, I'm here to tell you, if I'm ESPN's executives, I'm like beating my head up against the wall here. I'm like, we're paying this much for this again? Really? That's what we're doing? At the very least, we need more volume. You got to give us more inventory for us to offset what we're losing because our advertisers are not getting the ratings that we promised. We are not getting the NFL playoff numbers that we were promising our advertisers. That's the only way to combat it. Now, by contract, they have to look at it every 3 years. We're about to start the sixth year of the television contract of the 12-year deal. So if it's bad, and I think it could be, then the suits of ESPN can make recommendations to the college football commissioners to say, hey, we really need to do something here. And I think pressure's been building. We saw some quotes last year from Barry Alvarez, from a few other people around the country that we really need to take a look at this or that. And now you're beginning to see some home-and-home contracts with Texas and Alabama playing at Texas in 22. These sudden decisions about games that are going to be played in 2024, 2025, I think the tea leaves you need to be reading is that athletic directors at these schools know we're going to go to eight eventually. And so by the time we get to the new television deal, you better have a better power base in your non-conference schedule. So I'm counting on that. I'd love to see it happen sooner rather than later. But if it doesn't, Dave, Bubba, fellas, I'm telling you, if they don't change it, good. Because when the rights come up and there's a chance Fox might get it, probably, hopefully we'll get it right. You know, so selfishly, that's what I'm kind of hoping for.
Well, I hope that certainly we can do that and have you there. As long, I don't care what network. Obviously, I know that Fox is big for you there, your employer, but as long as we can get it right would be great, but certainly that would be great for you, for Fox. Listen, Timmy B, I appreciate you so much. One final question. I know Kyle had, are you broadcasting? Are you doing the interview from the Chateau Brando? That's what he was wanting to ask.
Am I at the Chateau now? Absolutely.
All right.
Yeah, and I just put out on Instagram a couple of hours ago the backyard on the pool deck. So you can check out the what you don't see is the hot tub. You do see part of the backyard. So yeah, everything's done from the Chateau. And I promise, though, years ago when I was doing the show and it was not televised, I might have been doing it in just a robe, and I do mean just a robe. I did conduct this interview. I did conduct this interview fully clothed.
So okay, great.
You can be happy to know that. Okay.
All right. Well, we enjoyed your time, and thank you so much. I feel like when Johnny Carson invited the comedian over, that we've made it when we have one of my favorites of all time to be on the show. I know the guys would concur with me, with Kyle and Bubba Wood. Thank you, Timmy B. Thank you so much. I'm very excited to have this interview on of the week that we're starting college football. It means a lot. Thank you so much. Good luck for the broadcast, and certainly we'll be watching, and just hard to believe a week.
Oh, please tell Kyle I'm sorry I missed him. But we'll have another date at another time, and we'll get that fixed, okay?
All right. Thank you, sir. Thank you very much. Appreciate it, and look forward to it very soon.
You bet. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Ready to talk to Tim Brando?
Unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to talk to Tim Brando, but you and Bubba, excuse me, you and Dave did, Bubba, and why don't we go to that interview right now?
Appreciate it, Tim. Really enjoyed having you on the show. And so that's what, Kyle, when you listen to Tim Brando, I was not able to actually take part in the interview because I was tied up doing some things with my kids, taking care of some different business. But it was an excellent interview, and just right off the bat, that's what Dave, I thought, did an excellent job, and just some of some of Tim's responses to Dave's questions, I mean, were just right on point as far as what we like to hear. You know, right before that interview, you were talking about our thoughts and feelings toward the so-called Power Five, or as Tim Brando said in that interview, the Autonomous Five. But one of the things that I've always respected about Tim Brando down through the years is he's given the so-called Group of Five teams, and again, we hate that term, but the teams from those conferences outside the Power Five, he's really given those teams their due.
Yeah, no, he firmly believes that good football is good football, and the term Power Five is about, you know, as he likes to call them, the Autonomous Five, and that's a good term for it. And I don't know what you call us, the other five, I guess. Timmy B supports the American, and knows we play good football, and we're on par with the ACC and the Pac-12. I'm telling you, you take Clemson out of the ACC, and you line up the American in the ACC. I would be shocked if we didn't at least go 6-6.
Absolutely. Something else of note before we get to our next interview. Earlier today, today being Monday the 26th, I saw a scheduling note. One of our conference brethren, divisional brethren at that, Cincinnati, some big games on the docket over the next decade or so for the Bearcats. The game that will be played in the most near future is the game at Arkansas. So they'll travel to Fayetteville to play the Razorbacks in 22. And then you also have a home and home with the Boston College Eagles out of the ACC. BC will actually go to Nippert Stadium first in 26 before the Bearcats make the trek to Chestnut Hills in 27. And then they scheduled our opponent this week, the NC State Wolfpack, will make the trip, the Bearcats will make the trip there in 23 before the Wolfpack make the trek up to Nippert Stadium in 2029.
Now, does the Arkansas game have a return date, or is that a bye game for the Bearcats?
According to what I saw, it's a bye game.
Wow, okay. Well, you know what? Makes me feel a little bit better about us doing it if Cincinnati's willing to do it.
Right. We'll see. But according to the tweet that I saw put out there by a Cincinnati source, and that is Chad Brindle with Bearcats 24/7 site, that's what I just saw, that date at Arkansas. So unless there's something that was unintentionally left out, that is the case. So a little surprising that they would do a game there without a return trip, because you would have expected that to probably been somebody like Texas or Alabama, maybe, or someone along those lines.
Yeah, particularly being I saw Arkansas play at Colorado State this year.
Right.
So I'll be interested to see if there is a return date that wasn't listed. That would be a hefty payout to get Cincinnati to do a bye game. I wonder what Arkansas is paying, if that is the case.
Yeah.
But we need to investigate further. And there's some rumors, you know, not that we want to get too deep into rumor and innuendo, but there's some rumors that potentially, some Rutgers or some Maryland's, North Carolina's perhaps coming on our schedule here in the near future.
Yeah, I've always thought that Rutgers and Maryland would be games that would make sense, and Big Ten opponents. So, and then obviously those are also areas that we recruit fairly heavily, particularly Maryland. But we've already secured a guy in this 2020 class from the state of New Jersey, and we've had a lot of success up there going back to the 90s with the likes of Danny Gonzalez, Scott Harley, et cetera.
Yeah, and these are just – and Chris Hall, by the way, who we just talked to.
Right, yeah.
Another New Jersey kid. But these are just rumors at this point. But there is some speculation out there that we may have something in the works with Rutgers, Maryland, and North Carolina. Those are the three schools I've heard, Bubba. Now, those are just rumors. We can't confirm any of this. This is just pure speculation.
I'll tell you what. Right now, let's catch up with Mike Yam of the Pac-12 Network. Had an excellent chat with Mike. He's been on the show before. Really enjoyed having him back. And let's go to that interview with Mike Yam of the Pac-12 Network right now.
Looking now at our Power 5 preview, and Bubba, we have one of our favorite guests coming back with us.
Yeah, we caught up with this guy last season. I'm very excited, as we're going to be talking Pac-12, to have Mike Yam from the Pac-12 Network. Mike, welcome in.
Guys, always, it's been a little bit, but I know if I get the call from you, I know that football season is right around the corner. So it's a good time of the year.
We're very excited, and I'll tell you what, we're very excited locally to have our new coach. Just what a difference a season makes is covering the team. Even the media is happy now, a lot happier. Administration, we have a new AD. Everything is better at East Carolina since the last time we talked to you. So we're even more excited about talking football this year.
Oh, I can only imagine. And I'm sure you guys were pretty excited to see the type of season that Gardner Minshew had a year ago.
Yeah, we wish to.
Yeah, we wish to Gardner Minshew succeed, but it confirmed all the faults we had about our previous head coach.
Yeah. Well, that's why he's not a head coach anymore with us, and we can move on. Let's talk Pac-12 football. Mike, where do you want to start? One of the divisions, or what do you?
Yeah, wherever you guys want to go. I mean, I feel like the North right now is certainly the power of the conference with Oregon and Washington. I was in Seattle this week to see Chris Peterson's team. I was at Stanford yesterday. I think the Cardinal are actually going to be better than some people anticipate. Washington State's going to be in that mix. Cal, I think, is going to be in the mix. So the North, to me, is where the power lies right now in the Pac-12.
I know a lot of people are big on Oregon this year. Do you think they're the favorite in the West, or do you think it's going to be Washington?
North.
You know, I think when it comes to this conference, the team with the fewest amount of questions, and we're talking obviously before the season in the month of August, and knowing what I know about the teams, Utah to me seems like, you know,
Utah,
South,
yeah.
You know, I think Utah is primed to be the Pac-12 champs this year. Now, that said, I could see Oregon being there. I could absolutely see Washington being there. I think the buzz around Oregon stems through the fact that they got, like, at least three guys on that offensive line that are going to be early picks in the NFL draft. They got a quarterback that could be the first quarterback taken off the board. Last year, though, 50-some-odd drops from the wide receiver position, and they've addressed that with a transfer in Juwan Johnson from Penn State, who, you know, at least in the spring game, looked like a monster. And Mario pulls in one of the best recruiting classes in the entire country, and he's got three wide receivers in that group that you talk to more and more people around the conference, people up in Eugene, they'll tell you those guys are the real deal. Micah Pittman is one of those guys. He's the brother of Michael Pittman, the wide receiver at USC. So there's really an opportunity for Oregon to absolutely be in that conversation for the Pac-12 championship.
With the Oregon, they get things kicked off in a big way opening weekend, coming down to Arlington to take on Auburn.
Yeah, those guys are big time, and if you like football that's being played in a phone booth, this is the game for you. I mentioned the offensive line for Oregon being a juggernaut, but you know, I think you can make a case for maybe three of those guys on Auburn's D line that are going to be, you know, NFL guys, you know, first, second round picks. So it's kind of strength versus strength in that game, but it's really a golden opportunity for Oregon to stake claim that they are the team to beat on the West Coast. And, you know, Justin Herbert balls out. I think that is the way to kick off a potential run to New York City to be invited for Heisman.
One team that comes to mind that certainly you think about in college football that's been down, they've had, and since we've had Scotty Montgomery, they've had like about four coaches. I'm talking about Southern Cal. USC, how do they look this year? Any improvements? I know the people out there, it's almost like a pro team, how much they love their team. Are they any better this year?
Look, I think there's a change in offensive philosophy. People are going to talk about the air raid, and I don't know if it's Mike Leach's air raid, despite the fact that it's Graham Harrell that's running the show, but they're going to be good. I mean, you look at North Texas and what Harrell did there. They still had a 1,000-yard rusher on that roster, and that's something that you don't typically see from a Mike Leach team. I throw that out there because I think about all the talented tailbacks that have come out of USC's program. That said, this year with JT Daniels in year two, I would imagine there's continued growth from him in a system that's going to be more beneficial to some of the deficiencies that we saw on the offensive line a year ago. And he's got three wide receivers that are Sunday guys. And to me, I think this is a talented team, a supremely talented team that you can make an argument maybe has more talent than any team in the conference. I think they're in that conversation. The reality is I look at those first six games of the year, and that's freaking murderer's row, man. Like, that is tough sledding. You know, best case scenario, maybe they're looking at 4-2, and that's how they start off with Fresno State, who's coming off a historic 12-win season and, you know, a conference championship, you know. And to me, I think people will say Fresno State, and they're like, oh, they should handle business. That's not an easy team. You know, there's Notre Dame in the mix on that sixth game. They're playing Utah, who's the favorite right now in the conference, and they were the preseason pick by the media to win the league. Washington, we know what we think about that team. I mean, this is not an easy go for Clay Helton to start the year. So when you ask if they're going to be better, I think they're a better football team this year than they are last year. I just don't know if that means more wins based off of that schedule.
When you look at Utah in the South, and you talk about them, a lot of folks are projecting them to win the South. Just Kyle Whittingham, what continuity he's brought that program over the last decade plus. So when you take a look at the Utes, can you tell us some specifics about them and what folks can expect out of them this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a real opportunity for them to be a dark horse college football playoff team this year. Schedule's a little bit more manageable than some of the other teams in the league, considering their talent. You mentioned Kyle Whittingham, 15 years now at the head coach spot in an industry that is as fickle as any on the planet. That's the world of college coaching. Really, the coaching profession in general is pretty fickle. But he's been there 15 years as the head coach, 25 years if you count his time as a defensive coordinator. So he's got these strong ties. He's built this program. They make the jump to the Pac-12, you know, almost, 10 years ago? I think it's 9 now at this point. And, you know, they've never been an embarrassment. And a lot of that has to do with the size up front. Kyle wants to win with running the football and playing defense. This team, I remember being in his office about a year ago, looking at the roster. We were there doing our show at Pac-12 Network in week one. And I remember saying to him kind of flippantly, hey, this is a team that when you look at the roster, coach, don't you think that maybe even next year this team could even be better? They were littered with sophomores and juniors. Now this year it's juniors and seniors. And he gave me that coy smile. I said, oh, you know, we're worried about this season, but no doubt, you know, we feel like we've set the program up in a good position to be successful. And they've done just that. And not only are there multiple NFL players on that defense, like I really do think they have one of the elite defenses, not in the conference, in the country. I don't think they have the depth that, you know, Clemson or Alabama has. I mean, I don't know if there's anyone else in the country that does have that depth, but in terms of their frontline guys, the guys they're throwing out there, they're as good as any in the country. The secondary is terrific with Johnson and Blackman. Bradley and Nye is a fourth up front. So, like, they got dudes. And, you know, Zach Moss is one of the best running backs in the country. Tyler Huntley, can he find some consistency at the quarterback spot is, I think, one of the biggest questions in that downfield threat. Britton Covey is a good wide receiver, but, you know, who's that explosive guy that could take it to the house when you know you need that big play? They have it in the running attack with Zach Moss. What do they have at the perimeter? That's maybe the biggest question they have coming into the season.
Let's take a look at the Arizona State Sun Devils. Herm Edwards, winning season in his first year, 7-6. And they did drop the bowl game to Fresno State. What do you think Herm Edwards and the Sun Devils will accomplish in year two?
Yeah, look, they're going to throw a freshman running back out there, Jaden Daniels. I remember talking to you guys about Herm Edwards a year ago, and people were looking at that hire by Ray Anderson, their athletic director, and saying it's, you know, it's a joke of a hire, and, you know, they were kind of being poked at and made fun of. Well, turns out, you know, there's as Herm said, there's room on the train. There might not be seats anymore. I might have to stand, but people are piling on to the Herm Edwards train right now, and they should. He has shown the ability to hire an unbelievable staff. I mean, his staff is ridiculous. You know, with all the NFL talent, Danny Gonzalez, their defensive coordinator, I think as good as any. Rob Lichten, their OC, also really good. From a talent perspective, though, you know, a year ago they had a fifth-year senior quarterback in Manny Wilkins, and they had N'Keal Harry. And you felt like that was good enough to keep them competitive. Turns out it was, but you also insert a running back who goes for over 300 carries last year in Eno Benjamin and is on the short list of one of the best running backs in the country. I mean, this league right now, the conference in general, has some of the best running backs, I think, collectively in the nation. Just look at the numbers and the statistics that would bear that out. This year, it's a freshman quarterback in Jaden Daniels. Where's the skill here in terms of the guys on the perimeter? You know, Darby, I think, is one guy that can have a pretty good season. Wide receiver, question for him. But defensively, they have some guys. And, you know, you saw it in a freshman in Merlin Robertson a year ago with the conference, you know, the conference's freshman defensive player of the year, and certainly deserved those accolades. Got eight guys returning to that defense, which is a huge positive for them. I think there's a little bit of a hit just in terms of the offense based off of the fact that you lose N'Keal Harry and Manny Wilkins. But I'm fairly confident that next year is going to be a better year for them. I think they're competitive in the South. I just don't know if they're better talent-wise than a Utah right now or even a USC. But we will see that matchup between SC and ASU in November.
You know, Mike, one of the things that very thing is that when you were talking about Herm is that I heard satellite radio different places that were laughing at you were talking about that. And the funny thing is, I was saying even last year, is the fact that this guy, one of the things I've enjoyed about it is it sounds like from what I've heard on the outside, you're the expert, not me, but I'm on the East Coast, you're on the West Coast. People have been bragging about his recruiting. Is that another thing that he's doing?
Oh, it's huge. It's huge. You know, and that's like the one thing, and I think I might have even said this to you guys about a year ago. People who are laughing at the hire think about Herm Edwards, the TV person, and they don't think about Herm Edwards, the actual person. And I got to work with him at ESPN for a couple of years, and he was as genuine a person as I've ever been around. And I know he likes to have fun on television, and, you know, it's a little bit of a character. You know, you talk to him, and I knew he'd get into a living room, and mom and dad aren't saying no. Look, I mentioned the staff, Antonio Pierce, right? Won a Super Bowl with the Giants. Those two guys worked together at ESPN. I got to work with AP a little bit. AP's handling their recruiting and was coaching some high school in Southern California. It's a genius hire because Todd Graham was having some problems against some California kids late in his tenure. You look at their signing days, and they're getting Southern California kids right now because of additions like a Marvin Lewis to that staff, a Hall of Famer, and Kevin Mawai, who's an analyst for that team. I mean, they have these guys where they've been able to pull in some top-flight kids that you know, quite honestly, in previous years, they weren't necessarily getting. So it's been a huge factor and a huge reason why I think ASU's the arrows pointing up for that team right now.
Look at in Arizona, over at Arizona, the Wildcats. They Kevin Sumlin's in year number two there, struggled in year one. Did a great job at Houston, then the Texas A&M. Things started off great and things kind of, you know, fizzed out and not off to a hot start in Arizona. Do you think he'll have a better year number two? He actually gets started next weekend at Hawaii.
Yeah, I think, look, that's going to be an emotional game with Coach Tomey and his passing this offseason, obviously being around both of those programs and just talking to some people around that team and their staff. And that's definitely something that's going to weigh in on them. From a football perspective, you're right. In year number two, I think the biggest question for them is what happens on defense. I know people will talk about Khalil Tate, and they should. 2 years ago, burst onto the scene, cover Sports Illustrated last year, gets banged up, struggled, I think, to grasp some of the things that staff wanted him to do offensively. And J.J. Taylor coming out of that backfield, once again, another talented running back in this league. They have the weapons. Like, I don't think stopping them and scoring was an issue. Last year, top three in yards per game in the conference and points per game. They were scoring enough that what they weren't doing, and I know there's questions right now at the wide receiver spot for them, but I'm going to give someone and his staff some credit and say they'll figure that out. It's where's this team at defensively? Had massive problems getting to the quarterback a year ago. That was a problem for them. And they have some nice players like Colin Schooler, really good linebacker on this team. But, you know, generally speaking, to me, that is questions 1 through 5 on the checklist for the Wildcats. Can they come up with enough stops to stay competitive? You know, guys, a year ago, I was doing a show on SiriusXM Radio with Ryan Leaf, and Ryan thought that they had a chance to go undefeated. I mean, that's how much hype there was around this program because of Tate and what he did two seasons ago. I mean, he was nothing. I mean, that was like a historic little run that he was on a couple of years ago. And then last year, just, you know, because of injuries, because of the offense, and I think it was mostly injuries, but, you know, that was an issue for him. And I just think that they got to figure out ways to get stops on defense. To me, that's the biggest question around this football team.
A team that we haven't delved into in the South is UCLA. They showed some progress late in the year under Chip Kelly in terms of their offensive production, and their defense was struggling quite a bit. So they beat USC, and then they lost the shootout to Stanford. Something you really don't see Stanford playing a lot of shootouts. But and tell us what to expect in year two as the Bruins return 19 starters.
Yeah, UCLA right now, you mentioned those 19 starters. They also played 21 true freshmen a year ago. That's the most that they've ever played in school history. And, you know, I made the mistake of talking to Chip a couple weeks back and saying, oh, you know, last year you guys were young. And he's like, no, not just last year. This year, we're still young. You're looking at like 50 guys on that roster that are like freshmen and sophomores. I didn't realize the number was that high. It might even be 47. I got to go back to my notes on that one. But the point is, this is a young football team. And I know there were some growing pains last year. You know, Wilton Spate, the transfer, was supposed to kind of steady things before Dorian Thompson Robinson, who's a true freshman, could take over the reins. Well, Spate goes down, DTR comes in, and there were some issues there offensively. I mean, it's not easy for a true freshman to come in Division I football, playing in a Power 5 conference, and thrive. That's the exception to the rule. We love the Trevor Lawrences of the world. It's great to talk about him and Tua and what those guys can do. That's not normal. That's why we give those guys praise. It's not that easy for, you know, true freshmen to come in, you know, 17, 18 years old and thrive at that level. And DTR, I thought, did a pretty good job. And you're right. The offensive production got significantly better down the stretch. Margin of defeat also closed. They were in some good games. They were in some competitive games down the stretch. I think they're going to be better this year. But truthfully, guys, like I look at next season for UCLA and feel more confident about some of those underclassmen growing up and maturing in this team's offense.
The only team we haven't talked about so far in the South is the Colorado Buffaloes. Mike McIntyre in 2016, he won 10 ball games, but just 5-7 his last 2 years. And now you have Mel Tucker coming in after an excellent tenure as defensive coordinator at UGA.
Yeah, I was actually just in Boulder 2 days ago to watch them practice and kind of spend some time with Coach. Laviska Shenault, best wide receiver in the country. I don't think it's close. I know people on the East Coast might disagree with me, but I looked at the stretch that he had last season, and the dude's a baller. Montez, their quarterback, he's a senior. You know, I remember being in Boulder a couple of years ago, and he was having fun. He's a kid. He was a sophomore. He's out there talking nonstop in the practice, just kind of goofing around a little bit. And being there 2 days ago, there was none of that. This dude is all business. They have they're not SC, they're not Washington State in terms of the skill at the wide receiver spot. They have the best wide receiver in Shenault, but they're right there. They're in that conversation. They got massive threats on the perimeter, but I'm just concerned about them defensively from a size perspective, from a secondary perspective. That's, to me, their biggest question. Nate Landman, their linebacker, he could be an all-conference guy. He's a stud, but I just think there's more questions than answers right now. They're going to score. They're going to be competitive. I think they're better than what people are saying, but they're far off right now from playing for a Pac-12 championship like they were a couple years ago.
Moving back to the North, we have not talked about the Cal Bears. Justin Wilcox entering year three, 5-7, 7-6. They certainly seem to be trending in the right direction. What can you tell us about Cal?
Yeah, Cal defensively, those guys were monsters. 21 takeaways a year ago. They won games because of their defense. Remember, they won and they beat Washington at home last year without scoring an offensive touchdown. Biggest question, can they figure it out at the quarterback spot? Do they have the wide receivers? It's such a crazy thing when you look at the role reversal. A few years ago, Sonny Dykes was there. It's Jared Goff and wide receivers galore, and couldn't stop anyone. Now it's their defense under Justin Wilcox that's winning them football games. They got to figure that out. Garbers has to grow. But they're not going to win the division, but they're going to decide who wins it. I would say this, they're not going to win the championship in the league, but they absolutely are going to decide who wins that league crown. They're going to come up with some wins that people don't expect. There's no doubt in my mind that happens this year. They're too good defensively.
Up in Corvallis, things have been a mess in recent years. Sure. Just a combined, I think, something like 9 wins in 4 seasons. So Jonathan Smith, there at his alma mater, 2-10 last year. They have 16 starters returning. Do you see things getting better for the Beavers?
Yeah, love Jonathan Smith. He's the right guy for the job for a lot of reasons. Too long to list all of them on this show, but he's a stud. I think he's the perfect fit there. And you're right, the starters on offense, this is like the exact opposite of Cal. Had massive problems. I mean, they are last in the country, or at least near last in the country, in a lot of defensive categories. This team is going to look different. A couple transfers that are coming in, a couple from Nebraska, they can play. They're going to help change the complexion of this defense. And then offensively, they get a 6-year of eligibility for Jake Luton. He's got to stay healthy. Tristan Jebbia, another transfer from Nebraska. I think he gets a little bit of burn, but Isaiah Hodgins is as good of a wide receiver as there is in the country. Jamar Jefferson was kind of burst onto the scene at that freshman running back spot. He gets the opportunity because Artavis Pierce goes down with an injury. Let's not forget, Pierce runs for over 150 yards and 2 touchdowns against Ohio State in a loss in week 1, goes down with an injury, and Jefferson balls out. Now the two of those guys are in the backfield. There's weapons offensively for this team. Biggest question, can you get stops on defense?
So, Mike, in wrapping things up, last year you had Washington taking down Utah in the championship game. This year, and do you think it'll be a potential rematch, or do you think it'll be Oregon coming out of the North, and who do you like to win it?
Yeah, I think there's a great opportunity to see a rematch, and we also get it during the regular season in Seattle. I remember being at that UW-Utah game in Salt Lake City, as physical a game as I've ever seen in person. I mean, that was like it was unbelievable, just the hits that were happening on the football field. I think Utah is the team in the South. I don't know about the North, and I feel awful saying that, and you're asking for a pick, because I could see it going either way, Oregon or Washington. The secondary, when I was up in Seattle the other day, like, there's no drop-off from last year. It's unbelievable. Jacob Eason's in there. He's got a competition with Jake Haner. There's a freshman wide receiver, guys, Puka Nacua. Remember the name. Had 3 wow moments in this practice. So I can see them winning it, but I can see Oregon with Herbert and company just taking over down the stretch. It is a coin flip between those two teams in the North.
Mike, I know you're on the Pac-12 Network. How can folks follow you on social media?
Yeah, Twitter and Instagram at Mike_Yam. Also on the Facebook page, just Mike Yam. And we're going to be pumping out content all season long. So if you're a football fan, and I know you guys are on the East Coast, and you know there's dudes that you want to pay attention to just because you know you're going to be watching them on Sundays. And our crew, we got everyone covered from all the guys on our side of the country.
Well, Mike, thanks for your time. I know you have to be somewhere now. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Look forward to maybe we can talk again during the middle of the season.
Absolutely, guys. Really appreciate the time.
Thanks so much, Mike. Really appreciated your time. It was great hearing your perspective on the Pac-12. And I'll tell you what, Kyle, when you take a look at the Pac-12, you certainly think of Washington with the tremendous way that Chris Peterson has built that program back up to the way they were in the early 90s when they won a national title under the legendary coach Don James. But then you also you think about what Kyle Whittingham has done at Utah, the longevity he's had there, and I think went right at 15 years now. And
yeah.
And then also it'll be interesting to see like if Coach Helton can get USC back into the mix, or maybe also like David Shaw at Stanford.
Yeah, don't leave out Mario Cristobal and his Oregon Ducks.
Of course.
They're going to be contenders also. So, the Pac-12 is pretty wide open. It'll be a fun league to watch. They've almost become an afterthought. If the American is the so-called Group of Five team that's in between, then the Pac-12 is the Power Five team that's in between. They're almost a Group of Five. They get left out of the playoff every year. It's like they're an afterthought out west. What they really need is for USC to be good again. That's what they need desperately. So it'll be interesting to see. Oregon's got a big game this coming weekend with Auburn. A nice way to start the season. If the Ducks can win that one, that would be a nice win not only for Oregon, but for the Pac-12 as a whole.
Yeah, you read my mind. I was just about to say, speaking of the Oregon Ducks and quarterback Justin Herbert, and those guys are going to be down at Jerry's World against Gus Malzahn and the Auburn Tigers. So tremendous opening weekend matchup there, and one that I will certainly intend on DVRing.
Yeah, absolutely. It should be a lot of fun.
So, Kyle, as we move toward game day, and since say obviously we have our preview that we'll put out late Wednesday evening or Thursday morning. Again, talking to Johnny Evans, the longtime color analyst alongside Gary Hahn on the Wolfpack Sports Network. Had an excellent chat with him earlier today, Monday the 26th, and then we also caught up with Morgan Ehlers, of course, the voice of Dowdy Ficklin Stadium, Pirate Radio personality with the Extra Point on Monday nights at 6 p.m., and then also, of course, the dad of current starting quarterback, Holton Ehlers.
Yeah, looking forward to that, doing the preview and getting ready for game day come Saturday.
And then after the game, last year we really had a lot of success with our Pirate Football Playback. We'll be doing that once again. And this week, it appears as though we'll be joined by former East Carolina tight end and current ESPN3 color analyst Jay Sunhalter. Really enjoyed catching up with Jay. He brings the perspective of a former Pirate and then also the perspective of an analyst. So really enjoy having Jay on the show, and I know we'll have a lot of fun, hopefully talking about a Pirate upset on Saturday evening.
No doubt. Yeah, I can't lie. I'm looking forward to it. That should be out Saturday night, hopefully. And we'll look back at the game that was and discuss that between the three of us plus Jay. Hey, by the way, where's Jay working this weekend? Has he got a game?
I believe he may be working the Campbell game. That was still up in the air the last time I talked to him when I set up our interview for the playback. But if he's working a game, I think it will be the Campbell game, and I don't recall who they're playing. But a lot of times the games that he is working, it'll either be Campbell or Charlotte or Gardner Webb, one of the in-state teams. Whether it's SCS or, in Charlotte's case, FBS. But
Watched him call a game for Charlotte and Old Dominion last year.
Right, and not to get off on a tangent, but, yeah, that was actually right there before the Pirates played ODU, so Jay was able to provide us with some excellent perspective on the Monarchs.
Yep, yeah, a couple weeks. Hey, Bubba, if people just wanted to mention this, if you'd like to advertise the Sports Objective Podcast, please feel free to drop us a line at thesportsobj@gmail.com. That is thesportsobj@gmail.com, and put in the subject line advertisement. And we'd love to talk to you about a potential sponsorship here on the podcast.
Absolutely. And as far as social media, you can follow us on Twitter at TheSportsOBJ, on Instagram at TheSportsObjective. Like and follow us on Facebook. We're approaching 700+ for sure. I guess we're closing in on 750 now in terms of likes and followers on Facebook. It's really had a boom in the last few weeks. And then also YouTube. Have a lot of content on our YouTube channel. Our 50 Pirates in 50 Days, which are SoundCloud and YouTube exclusive interviews with Pirate players from a variety of eras, going back to Clarence Stasevich's era in the 1960s. Some excellent chat with former East Carolina football players, so definitely go back and check those out. And then also we have all of our other podcasts on there in addition to videos, like next weekend when the Pirates are playing their home opener against the Gardner Webb Bulldogs, we'll have videos up of the new entrance video in addition to the no quarter video, which kind of an interesting fact about that. I don't think this was mentioned in our interview with Curtis. They were still working out some of the logistics of it and so forth. But kind of cool that that no quarter video was filmed out in Manio on one of the pirate ships there with some of the other actors in addition to Steve Wetzel.
Yeah, I don't, you know, I haven't been to Manio in a couple of years, but the only ship I know down there, Bubba, is the Elizabeth II. So I'm assuming that's it. Unless there's something I don't know about. I'm assuming that's the ship that was used, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, I'd say that's probably accurate, but I do not know for sure. But cannot wait to see those videos, Curtis and the folks, Jonathan Medford, another pirate, and everyone at Port City Films. Did a tremendous job last year, and I'm glad that we were smart and decided to go with them again, because I'm sure this year's will be even better for sure. And so do you have anything else, Kyle, before we wrap this thing up and go to get out of here?
That's it, Bubba. Yeah. Just looking forward to Saturday and get the Pirate football season underway. Also looking forward to Thursday night. I always love the first Thursday night of college football season. Before week zero, that was always the first, you know, real night of college football. And it's still the first full night. Week zero, you had two games. But Thursday nights, you got Cincinnati, UCLA. You got FIU at Tulane. You got UCF playing on against Florida A&M. You got Clemson and Georgia Tech. So you got a full night of college football Thursday night. So look forward to that before we get Saturday.
Yeah, a lot of games Thursday and Friday night. I was looking at that earlier this evening, and like you said, not only a lot of games, but some solid matchups as well. I'm looking forward to checking those out. So glad that college football is here. Well, we really appreciate you listening. I'm so thankful. This has been another excellent month thus far, and we still have 5 days left. So wherever you're listening, do us a favor, like us, or write us a review, subscribe on whatever the case may be on the various platforms. Until next time, for Kyle from LaGrange Barber, I'm Bubba Rosenbaum, and you've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.